There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Using nothing more than Newton's laws of gravitation, we astronomers can confidently predict that several billion years from now, our home galaxy, the Milky Way, will merge with our neighboring galaxy, Andromeda. Because the distances between the stars are so great compared to their sizes, few, if any, stars in either galaxy will actually collide. Any life on the worlds of that far-off future should be safe, but they would be treated to an amazing billion-year-long light show. A dance of a half a trillion stars.
An excerpt from When Knowledge Conquered Fear. It's episode 3 of the TV series called Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We have been, as the episodes come out every weekend, we have been reviewing the episodes of Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. We'll do so here in the next half hour of the program on this Tuesday afternoon, March the 25th. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. A little bit later, we're going to respond to some recent comments made by former President Jimmy Carter about religion and its impact on gender equality. Dr. Alvin Schmidt of Illinois College will be our guest. Joining us to review Episode 3 of the TV series Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey, Dr. Danny Faulkner. He holds a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you very much.
I understand, before we get started here, that you were the subject of a rumor regarding Cosmos, that you have somehow insinuated yourself into the situation demanding to appear. Is there any truth to that?
None. It's really interesting. I've been doing a lot of interviews the last week or two, including on your fine show. Another one I did last Thursday was with Janet Mefford on the Janet Mefford show on the Salem Radio Network, and she asked me some questions, of course, and within the day, actually by a little after noon the next day, Friday, I believe it was Right Wing Watch had reported that I had demanded equal time on Cosmos. Of course, I made no such demand. It's really funny. They played a little clip, and if you listen to the clip, you'll understand that I didn't make any kind of demand at all on it. I'm just stating some facts there. And then it got picked up by The Wire, and then it was off to the races. All sorts of websites now, it's in the dozens at least. Some of these are pretty irresponsible sites, but others fashion themselves to be good, you know, supporting good news sites, you know, real news sites. And I always thought if you're going to report the news, you need some reporters, and reporters actually contact sources and check the story out. And I have yet to receive a phone call or an email from anybody asking questions about this. So all these websites just simply ran with this false story. It's absolutely baseless, that claiming that I demanded equal time on Cosmos. I don't think I changed my narrative, my story at all, different from what we've done in two previous programs with you. And I don't think anything I said on your show could be construed as demanding equal time, would it?
I definitely did not get that impression. Well, what would our listeners have been treated to last night in the third episode of Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey? Where did the host take the audience?
We started off talking about comets and the orbits they follow, and of course he's going to go into billions of years in the Oort cloud, and he pointed out that they really do need the Oort cloud to explain why comets exist at all today, because he acknowledged that comets have short lifetimes. And he also pointed out quite correctly there's no evidence for the Oort cloud. I thought that was interesting and not at all surprising. His predecessor, Carl Sagan, had said much the same thing, and nothing's changed in that front. So that was interesting. But then he went used that as a launch to talk about how people figured out the law of gravity, and the people involved, really the three people, pretty important, that'd be Sir Isaac Newton and also Edmund Halley and Robert Hooke. They were all contemporaries. And the broad picture that they portrayed between the interaction between the three was correct, as far as I know. Holly actually got to know Newton and became very supportive of Newton's work, and actually ended up paying for the publication of his Principia. If it weren't for Edmund Holly, we may have never heard of Sir Isaac Newton. It's that important, because Newton had been sitting on his work for about 2 decades, and it was Holly who pressed him to finally publish it. On the other hand, Robert Hooke and Isaac Newton despised one another. Robert Hooke could be a real stinker, and he was insulting Newton. He set a trap for him at one point, really embarrassed him badly. There was a lot of problems between these two men, and it was one of the reasons why, a main reason why, Newton turned his back at a fairly early age on math and science. He actually spent the bulk of his life studying the Bible. He was a very serious student of the Bible, particularly the book of Daniel. This was mentioned in a condescending sort of way in the program. But at any rate, the interplay went there. Now, as far as I know, the broad story that they presented of those three men is reasonably correct. However, noting in the first episode 2 weeks ago that they really misreported the story of Giordano Bruno, I have to wonder if some of these details may have been misrepresented. For instance, they did try to place Newton as being a mystic and a bit superstitious. They were claiming that he had engaged in this Bible code sort of thing, and I've never heard that before. I'm having a little difficulty confirming that idea. He certainly was a student of biblical prophecy. He set a date not for the Lord's return, but the Lord couldn't return prior to this date. I'm not so sure that it was based on some sort of hidden code, as the Cosmos show seemed to indicate. I think it may have been interpretations of prophetic passages instead.
Is part of the reason that Newton is problematic for the current crop of cosmologists and physicists, both theoretical and experimental, is because he did believe in a creator, and yet he developed he really is the father of physics. There's no two ways about it. And he developed the formulae and the mathematic principles that are still used today in everything else where relativity does not hold sway. In everyday life, in space travel, do they have a hard time with dealing with the man himself as a believer in God, and yet obviously with probably hands down the major contributor to science in the last 500 years?
Yeah, I think they do. I think that's indicated by the fact that they had to do a little bit of a hatchet job on him, indicating that he was a mystic and all this sort of stuff to discredit some aspects of his life. He literally wrote the book on physics and astronomy as we know it. He invented calculus. He did this by a very young age, just age 22. Incredible man. His intellect was unbelievable. His insight was very good. And he very much believed in a creator. I've read portions of the Principia, the founding document he wrote, and in that he made some statements toward the end particularly, and I've used these in some presentations I've given, to the effect that there must be a creator. The system couldn't have come about by itself. And he even went so far to conclude that the system that we see around us, God must exist, and God is an important part of discussion of what we call science today. So he was a proponent of intelligent design. He was a proponent of bringing God into the equation and talking about these things. He saw the hand of God in things, the form of Newton's law of gravity, inverse square of the distance. He saw in that design, he realized, first person to do so, that if the law of gravity were any different, you wouldn't have stable orbits. And so he was very much a man who believed in the Creator, and fascinated with the Bible, and that's a problem for a lot of modern people who want to look down on the Bible as not being very reliable, and God not being very welcome. And I think this was a subtle attempt in the show this week to kind of diss Newton in that respect.
What did they build upon in the Cosmos episode on Sunday night in detail on the work of Edmund Halley?
Okay, Edmund Halley, he was concerned about orbits and the law of gravity, some law of gravity. People were trying to figure out what force compelled planets to orbit around the sun, what forced the moon to go around the Earth each month. And they pointed out at one point Robert Hooke had claimed he had solved the problem, he had it, and they said, well, tell us, what is it? And apparently Robert Hooke was bluffing. He was kind of claiming something he thought he could solve. He went to work at it and couldn't solve it. And after a while, they began to realize that he was that Hooke was just full of himself at this point. Edmund Halley then heard about this young man named Newton. He apparently had not met yet, and went to go see him. And when he began talking to him, he began to find out just what was so that Newton was really on the right track. So again, the important part of Halley was getting Newton's ideas out for the world to see. Halley was key in that. That was the important part, I think, Halley's contribution. That came up pretty strongly in the Cosmos episode.
Is part of the problem also with respect to this entire time when physics and especially the building blocks of later astronomy are being laid by men like Halley and Newton? Is part of the problem not just the fact that, you know, these men believed in God, but also the way that they gave us to understand gravity is really the only way we still understand gravity. We can't explain it using the other theories. We have models for it. But doesn't gravity remain kind of a skeleton in cosmology's closet even today?
Well, we don't know what gravity is. The Newton's law of gravity stood firm for more than two centuries as the last word on the subject. Now, about almost a century ago, Albert Einstein put forth general relativity, which today is considered a better theory. However, you only use general relativity when you're talking about very high velocities, very large masses and energies. In everyday world, Newton's law works very well, and so in the physics I would teach to in the everyday world, we never used relativity. We always use Newton's law of gravity. The thing is, all it is a description. It tells you the how things happen, but not really the why. And the big mystery that Newton's law of gravity produces for us is that there's kind of this mysterious force just reaches out through space. The moon is pulled by the Earth, but it's called action at a distance. The Earth just reaches through space somehow and makes this happen. What general relativity does is it tells you at a little more fundamental level. It describes it as being this bending or warping of space and time that produces that acceleration. But, you know, people think, well, that's much, much deeper and it's more of a why. But in reality, it's just a deeper level of how. It's more descriptive, but it doesn't really tell you what gravity is. It's kind of embarrassing for someone in physics to admit that, but we don't know what gravity is.
I mean, but especially as we get into the kind of the higher levels here of quantum theory, there are all sorts of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
But gravity remains the puzzle piece that no one can make fit.
Yeah, there's no theory of quantum gravity yet, and people are actually a bit of despair. They believe the unification of gravity with the other fundamental forces of nature, that is way off into the future. And people have been working on this for decades, even before Einstein died a half century, almost 60 years ago now. He was working on it. So it's a problem that's been out there for a very long time, and we don't appear to be any closer than we were back then.
Dr. Danny Faulkner is our guest. We're reviewing Episode 3 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. He holds a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University. He's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. We'll be right back.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What is God's purpose for marriage? How should we respond when traditional marriage is openly mocked as irrelevant? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Your Marriage by God's Design. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guests Scott and Julie Stiegemeyer. You can find out more about Your Marriage by God's Design at issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your Marriage by God's Design, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Danny Faulkner is our guest. We're reviewing Episode 3 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. Another 10 minutes with him, and then we'll be responding to some recent statements by former President Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter is a bit miffed with both his church body and with religion in general. He says religion has been remains oppressive to women and harmful to women's rights and status in society. We'll see what Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book How Christianity Changed the World, responds to the recent thoughts of former President Jimmy Carter in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. Dr. Faulkner, I want to return to something you mentioned earlier in our conversation, and that is the Oort cloud. You'll need to explain what that is, and I guess my question about it is this an observed entity, or is it a theoretical entity?
Well, they talked about Hawley and Newton. They were able to derive orbits of objects around the sun, and comets orbit the sun. In fact, Hawley was the one who investigated cometary orbits. That's why we have that famous Hawley's Comet named after him. Unlike planets that have nearly circular orbits, comet orbits are very long ellipses with the sun at one end, so they spend most of their time, the comets do, very far from the sun, very cold. And the ices that make up the nucleus of a comet remain frozen at that point. But when they come in close to the sun, once each orbit, the sun's heat evaporates most of the ice. It becomes a gas, expands, knocks dust loose. We get a big tail and puts on quite a show. Then it goes back in the deep freeze and comes back eventually and repeats the process. The problem is comet nuclei are pretty tiny, and they lose a significant amount of material. Those ices get knocked out. And within a few trips, you start seeing the comets dying, fading away. And then you have other situations that arise when comets smash into planets. We saw that actually happen to a comet back in 1994. And then also they get ejected from the solar system. They come too close to one of the large planets, such as Jupiter, and its gravity yanks it and throws it out of the solar system. All of these mechanisms have been observed. We can kind of estimate their effects. And it turns out that far less than even 1 billion years, there would be no comets left. And most scientists think the solar system is at least 4.5 billion years. So why do we still have comets is a big question. Now, if the solar system is very young, as I happen to think it is, not a problem. But if it's billions of years old, you better have a way of getting comets created or brought into the solar system. So the suggestion is by Jan Oort, a scientist, an astronomer back 1950 or thereabouts, that there are little nuclei of comets very far from the sun, tens of thousands of times farther from the sun than we are on the Earth. And occasionally a passing star or other object will affect the orbits, cause them to fall into the inner solar system. So the idea is new comets are brought in to replace old comets as they are destroyed. And they call this the Oort cloud. And there's an amazing quote there from given many times from 1986 by Carl Sagan that, to the effect, there are many papers written every year about the Oort cloud, its history, its structure, its origin, and yet there's not yet a shred of direct evidence that it exists. And that situation has not changed in the past 28 years. There's still no evidence that the Oort cloud exists. It has never been observed. Not likely that we will ever do that in the near future either. So I always understood that science is the study of the natural world using the five senses. If you can't detect it in any way, then how could you possibly call that science?
Is it another one of those, I think the term you use is rescuing devices in order to explain, as you said, why we have comets if the universe and even the solar system, which is much younger, is so old?
Yeah, it is a rescuing device. And a rescuing device is okay as long as everybody understands that that's what you're doing. What I object to is when the rescuing device with no evidence is simply hypothesized and everybody agrees it exists and there's good evidence, there's good support for that. The other night, Tyson said that he subtly said that we even know where comets come from. And he was referring, I believe, to the Oort cloud. So that's where the confidence comes in. It would be more correct to say we think we know where they come from. I couldn't object to that. But he said very definitely that we know where they come from. Now, you may think I'm quibbling, but to the average person watching it, not knowing the background and the information in here, they hear this eminent scientist saying something like this, they just assume that, well, he must have evidence to back this up. Well, he doesn't. But you would not know that from hearing that discussion.
How much of that, in your observation, does modern cosmology get away with? And that is fudging what we know and what we theorize.
It's increasingly more and more and more. And I think it's particularly in what we call the historical sciences, trying to infer what's happened in the past and trying to invoke things to salvage what our problems we've had. I've seen this, and you mentioned cosmology particularly. They've thrown in all sorts of things to make trying to make cosmology, the Big Bang, work. And it never occurs to people that, well, maybe this stuff just isn't right. It's just added on and on. And I'm very distressed to see this trend in astronomy.
So in the best of all possible worlds, we should have Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, talking about comets and saying, look, here's the honest presentation. We believe that the solar system is 4 billion plus or minus years old. We got a problem. We shouldn't have any more comets. We do. They hang around all the time. They even discovering new ones all the time. This is what we think is happening, but we don't know.
That would be an honest assessment, and I'd like to see that. But I'm not holding out, and I'm not demanding that either. I'm just simply saying that would be a more honest assessment, I think.
Would that be better science?
I think so. Yeah, because it's separating out. You see what we really know and what we're hypothesizing, and that's the blending problem I see in a show like this. And by the way, I'm enjoying the show. Don't get me wrong, but it blends things that are known pretty well with things that are really not known at all. But the average person watching it would not have any clue as to what is what in this. It's a blend of these different things.
Is part of the problem too that science really cannot stop with Newton? And that is what we have been able to observe, the best way of interpreting it at this point. Newton has to kind of step back a little bit, and we have to come up with better explanations. How is physics and cosmology doing, in your opinion, in coming up with good explanations for the things that we observe that appear to be contrary to what Newton would show us?
Well, I think it's dangerous. I think you've got a huge change taking place. It's a very broad change and very subtle in science altogether, but there's a increasing exclusion of any possibility of a creator. There's the absolute commitment to naturalism, to what people have called scientism. They think that all answers can be found via science. It's a good tool, but it's still, when all said and done, just a tool. And I think that they're trying to oversell what science is capable of doing. they confuse technology, which is applied science. They talk about all the wonderful inventions we have, and saying, see, evolution has given this to us. Well, that's just confusing the application of science with science itself. And so good science actually describes how the world works today. When you start talking about what might have happened in the past, well, then you're changing the story quite a bit. And I see my own field of astronomy, and I suppose in other fields as well, they're increasingly trying to find these deeper answers, they think are deeper answers, at least, behind everything. And that alarms me.
We're three episodes in. You mentioned earlier teaching physics. If the content so far of Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, were the content of a college student's paper in your classroom, what grade would it receive so far?
Oh, I don't even want to go there. It's a mixed bag. I mean, there's some good science being done. There's some good history being done. But then there's a lot of stuff that's just not quite right, a lot of conjecture. I thought the first episode was dreadful because of the horrible information they gave. I thought of the three I've seen so far, the most recent one was the better one of the bunch. I mean, I had less to object to there. Again, there were a lot of subtle things about the worldview that I was concerned about. But it's a mixed bag at this point.
Dr. Danny Faulkner holds a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University and is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. You can find out more about Answers in Genesis at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Faulkner, thank you very much for being our guest, and I look forward to next week's conversation.
Same here.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time responding to recent comments, you'll hear them, made by former President Jimmy Carter about religion and gender equality. Now, he's a bit miffed by his own church body, Southern Baptist Convention, at least congregations of it that he says are oppressing, he says even encouraging the abuse of women. But he has a bigger point to make, and we'll get a response to it, and that is that religion, all religion, he paints with a broad brush, but including Christianity, and the only names he mentions are Christian leaders, has been detrimental to gender equality. That's the opinion of former President Jimmy Carter. When we come back, we'll find out where Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World, how he responds. We'll be right back.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
We, the saints at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church, wish all lovers of the unshackled art of music unceasing grace from God our Father and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Since the beginning, the church has spoken by her sacred hymns. Now is your chance to contribute to the great voice of the communion of saints throughout history with the St. Ambrose Hymn Writing Contest. Render your contribution to this great corpus of song. For more information, visit clamavi.com. That's C-L-A-M-A-V-I.com.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Would you like to learn about the Reformation theology you hear on Issues, etc.? We'll send you a pamphlet of Luther's Small Catechism for free. It contains the biblical teachings on the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, the Lord's Supper, and confession and absolution. Order your free copy of Luther's Small Catechism today. Just send your name and mailing address to talkback@issuesetc.org.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar, You're listening to Issues Etc.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India.
Sweden.
Egypt. France.
Turkey. Japan.
Australia. Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong.
Austria.
Finland.
Malaysia.
Singapore.
Bulgaria.
Korea.
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.